you know, like everybody else, we knew that we were going to have challenges and we were having to rethink our whole marketing strategy around how we were going to attract workers into the work sites. But never would I have thought that it was going to be as difficult as what it was. I'm quite an optimistic person, and I thought that it was a perfect opportunity for local workers to dispel the myth out there that local growers don't want local workers. They want backpackers and Pacific Islanders. So we went to the market with that message that this was going to be a perfect opportunity for that myth to be dispelled and for locals to get a real strong foothold in the door with being able to have opportunities on farm.
Kim, have the locals stepped up?
I don't want to knock locals because we've got some fantastic locals that have stepped up. Without them, we wouldn't be even hanging on by our fingernails at the moment. But for every one local that we have working in our orchard, and also the other, you know, multiple work sites that I have around the state, we probably have to contact 20 to 30 locals to get that one.
Have people accepted jobs and then just not turned up?
Every day of the week. We're now in a position where we get hundreds of applications, and initially pre-Christmas, we were quite excited with the number of applications we were getting because we thought, you know, this is great, it's working. But it wasn't until we started doing the physical inductions and then they were asked to turn up on a specific day that we realised that the only reason they were applying for the positions in the first place was because Centrelink was asking them to apply for the positions, and it's part of their job seeker allowance. They have to. There has to be evidence that they've applied for those jobs.
What about the mutual obligations, though, that they must accept any offer of suitable paid work or have a very good reason why they don't? And penalties are involved then. Have you seen any evidence of that happening?
No, there is no reporting mechanism that we have. There's no vehicle to report back to government, Centrelink, Job Actives, or any government department to essentially say this person was supposed to start work today and was a no-show. We've contacted them 10 times. They have come back to us and said they don't want the work.
And Centrelink hasn't spoken to you or attempted to have a conversation about some of these workers?
No government department has come back to either myself as the recruitment company or any of our farms that where we supply labour. Is anyone being asked to give feedback or name people that should have turned up for work and haven't?
Okay, now you're in a unique situation because you operate an apple orchard as well. You've got a farm and you've got your partner there, Troy Layton. I'll bring Troy in and ask Troy the situation. How do you view it, Troy?
Yeah, look, I suppose there's a lot of interesting discussions to go on between us. But, look, it is very difficult to attract people here and get them turning up. But I agree with Kim in that there aren't any repercussions. The number of people that just turn up for one day, don't turn up at all, and don't really give themselves the opportunity, or not prepared to give themselves the opportunity to earn good money. It's just sort of too focused on the first day and the second day, and not realising just know there is some pretty good money to be made. By the end of the season, once you've got physically conditioned and you've learnt the technique, you know, we've got a lot of guys out there that are picking their six bins a day, and a perfect example: 15-year-old son, he picked on Saturday and Sunday when he wasn't at school, hadn't picked before, but he picked three bins on his first day and would have picked four on the second day had he been allowed to, but I knocked him off, you know, because I knew he had to go to school the next day. So he's earning, so over the weekends, he would have earned $150, $200 a day. And that's a 15-year-old kid. So a 15-year-old kid can do it. There's no reason, plenty of these other locals in their mid-20s or 30s that can't do it either.
So how are you placed for workers? I'm assuming people would be thinking, listening to this, saying that your partner there runs an employment firm, so you wouldn't be worried necessarily about workers. Is that the case?
Well, that I think there's a few out there that might have that perspective, but I can give you an example of just this week. Tuesday, we were supposed to have, I need between 40 and 50 people, you know, to pick us, to turn up each day. We had, I think it was about 28 or 30 people supposed to turn up on Tuesday, and we had 10. So today we were supposed to have, there were the girls at Lynx rang around and confirmed that people would be here today. They said there'd be 23 starters plus 9 new ones. 4 of the 9 new ones have turned up, and I think only about 16 of the other 23 that now have been working here decided to turn up. So, yeah, there's certainly, just because my wife is also my labour supplier, I'm not certainly not getting any special treatment there. And I'm the same boat as every other orchard out there. In the north of the state, up the Tamar, they're struggling for workers. The guys out at Spraydon, they're getting by, but I know one of the growers out there, he's on platforms and they don't need picking bags or ladders. He's paying an hourly rate and he still can't get people to stick on hourly rate.
Kim, I'll come back to you and ask you, you've just advertised for more workers. What's been the reaction in the past week since you started advertising?
We've had two people.
How many positions?
Probably anywhere between 150 and 200.
I mean, how many overseas workers do you normally process at this time of the year?
Anywhere up to about 1,400, 1,500.
So how do you resolve that problem?
To be quite honest with you, Tony, I have no idea. I'm normally a really solution-focused person, and if something doesn't work, I can switch to another gear quite quickly and come up with another option, but we're just exhausting everything at the moment, and as much as it's not going to be something that's palatable for people out there listening, I think there's got to be some repercussions to people that can work and aren't working. And instead of encouraging employers to employ locally and giving them cash incentives to do that, there's no point. It's the only options we've got at the moment is to employ locally or Pacific Islanders. A grower doesn't have any choice, so they're wanting locals. They're desperate for locals. The other big problem is a lot of people, a lot of job seekers don't have the luxury of having their own vehicles and having disposable income to pay money on fuel to get to farms. Because most farms are in outlying areas. That could be 40 minutes away, 50 minutes away. That consumes a lot of money with fuel. We actually have some buses, and so we were just transporting workers ourselves. And there were some days that there was only two people on the bus. It wasn't commercially viable for us to do it. Transport is a big issue and a big concern. We've got locals that have said we'd like to work, but we've got no way of getting there.
It's Kim and Troy Layton who run an apple orchard in the north of the state. Kim also runs Lynx Employment, a company which sources farm workers for properties across Tasmania. The Country Hour has asked for a statement from the Department of Education, Skills and Employment. What's your take on that story? 0438 922 936, our text line number, 0438 922 936. Well, the elevated job seeker payments are set to end next month, and while welfare advocates are concerned, some farmers are glad to see the end of it. Some farmers believe the coronavirus supplement has been a disincentive to work and contributed to the agricultural worker shortage. Nathan Richardson is chair of the TFGA Vegetable Council. He's told Lachlan Bennett what these elevated job seeker payments meant for farmers.
It means on the ground for farmers what it has meant since the pandemic took hold, and even before that when the government was having problems with the backpacker tax. It stems right back to that, and it means really they're at a loss financially for produce either left on the tree or on the vine or in the ground. That's what it means.
Farmers have already been under pressure in losing that international workforce. What sort of stories have you heard about trying to get locals in to fill the gaps?
I think any avid listener of the Country Hour can recite the answer to that question, Lachlan. 50 people turn up within a couple of days. There's only a handful left. Farmers citing real concerns that hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars worth of crops going to be left on the tree or on the vine. If the government is hell-bent on handing money out for no reason, really, and disrupting a free market economy and paying people essentially to stay at home, then I think I think the question needs to be asked. They need to pay for the goods to stay on the tree or in the ground. I mean, that's the only fair alternative. This has been a campaign for nearly 12 months from the agricultural sector right around the country. I mean, there's no bigger issue than workforce in Australia at the moment. And if it gets to a point where a business is doing all they can, but seeing their income rot away or fall on the ground or rot in the ground, then I think it's fair and just that my grandkids dip into their savings a bit more to pay for what's going on at the moment, and that's through government-sponsored disruption of our economy.
So you see a direct link between people not showing up for farm jobs or leaving, you know, 1 or 2 days in and the elevated job seeker payments?
Oh, for sure. I mean, paying people to stay at home, you've only got to look at the broader economy. You can't buy a caravan. You can't buy a motorbike. The used car market is outperforming superannuation funds at the moment. The economy is awash with free cash because people can't travel overseas. It's struggling to go interstate. People are landlocked where they are. If you're staying at home and you're getting paid, why go to work? So what the government should be doing now is, okay, we've paid you to stay at home, now we're going to either pay you to go to work or we're going to pay the producer for the lost produce and income.
People on the other side of the fence would say, we've had a pandemic, it's been a pretty tough time, you know, this is just a way to tide people's over, you know, perfectly reasonable for the government to step in.
Well, the government stepped in about 10 years ago with the GFC. Now they're stepping in again. They step in with other things. But here on the land, if something goes wrong in our business, we very rarely get bailed out. So really, there's got to be a day of reckoning for our economy. Look at house prices. What if people are struggling, if people are really doing it tough, why is the real estate market in Australia double-digit growth? So there's a lot of indicators to suggest, okay, we've put enough money into the economy, let's look at what is getting left behind. And what is getting left behind is the apples on the tree, is the berries on the vine, is the crops in the paddock.
Given everything you've said, you must be looking forward to the end of those elevated payments. Things might go a little bit back to normal?
I'm not sure. I suppose we'll just have to wait and see. Maybe it will. I can't really see an influx of people turning up to work because the payments are reduced when they've had ample opportunity to go and get a job in the last 12 months, earning far more money than job seeker and job keeper.
So what to do?
We need to be really concerned about one side of politics wanting to introduce a minimum rate instead of piece rate. Simple economics proves that you cannot pay someone $25 an hour to pick $10 worth of produce. That doesn't add up. And the person that's picking $300 worth of produce in an hour is not going to work for $25. So for a political party to suggest that that is a good thing for the workforce is completely insane and would be detrimental to piece rate work all around the country. It makes no sense and it does not add up economically.
People are still struggling this season, but what about looking forward? Is things going to be resolved by next year?
I don't know whether they'll be resolved, but what I can predict is, and what I am telling people is that there is no better time to get in business. There is no better time to show an interest in agriculture, whether it's dairy, whether it's vegetable production, whether it's intensive grazing, a machinery operation, consultancy, support services. Agriculture is the place to be. Looking forward, I really hope that we can get over this pandemic, get over the workforce issue, and really have a change in mindset in Canberra that is really making people think that every time something goes wrong, Canberra is there to prop them up. And that is a signal in a country that is pretty dangerous, because what's the next problem going to be? How much is that going to cost us? We've already spent, like I said, my grandkids' taxes are now paying for this one. So what's the next one and how can we afford it?
That's Thurlaston farmer Nathan Richardson speaking about the end of the elevated job seeker payments and their impact finding workers, talking to Lockie Bennett. On the other side of the fence, welfare groups, including TASCOS, have condemned the changes and say cutting job seeker was not the way to restore economic confidence in order for Australia to recover from the recession.